This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Operation Gray Muzzle this week saw 200 homeless dogs flown to the U.S., where they've been distributed to shelters in North Carolina and Florida. In the second half of the show, we'll learn why the Humane Society of the U.S. decided to relocate these animals and how much this change in geography might help their chances of finding forever homes. But first, Pasco County Sheriff deputies last week arrested a Newport Richie man with a swastika tattooed on his chest. The Tampa Bay Times reports that man and four other self-proclaimed neo-Nazis were found with drugs, illegal firearms, and Nazi propaganda. Earlier this year, residents in communities around Tampa found flyers recruiting for the Ku Klux Klan in their neighborhoods, and that wasn't the first time. That hotbed of hate in Pasco County is not unique to Florida. The Southern Poverty Law Center tracks more than 60 hate groups in our state, giving Florida the dubious distinction of the state with the second largest number of active hate groups in the nation. Hate groups aren't new. The Ku Klux Klan's been committing acts of domestic terrorism against Black, Jewish, and minority communities since the 1860s. But the violence that erupted in Charlottesville, Virginia on August 12th of this year during a Unite the Right rally that ended with a car plowing into counter-protesters and leaving dozens injured and one woman dead is putting these hate groups in the national spotlight. A similar rally in Boston last week saw hundreds of so-called free speech protesters met by tens of thousands of counter-protesters. But authorities fear another clash this weekend with another self-professed right-wing group and the expected counter-protesters, which are set to converge at the University of California at Berkeley. But what qualifies as a hate group? And are these groups gaining traction in the wake of the violence and media attention of these protests? Here to tell us how the organization tracks hate groups and what's changed in recent years for Florida hate groups is Ryan Lenz, the senior investigative reporter with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Ryan, thanks for joining Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, thank you for having me.
We are talking about hate groups in Florida, how they're identified, and what the media attention means for hate groups across the country. Give us a call with your questions at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Ryan Lenz, we've had the Southern Poverty Law Center on our show before, and it's always a good idea to tell people how the organization came about. How did SPLC get into the business of tracking hate groups?
Well, the SPLC started in 1971 as a law firm to basically seek civil damages in the instances of extremist racist organizations and groups who had committed crimes. Shortly thereafter, we started a publication called Klan Watch, which documented the existence of the Ku Klux Klan across the South. And then as the radical right expanded and grew, so did our mission. And at this point in time, we track more than a dozen ideologies, hate groups across the country, and we also have programs to talk about civil rights education in schools.
So, and it's important to also point out, you are tracking different kinds of hate groups. That includes anti-LGBT, it includes white supremacists, and also African-American communities that are militant.
This is true, yeah. And Florida is home to almost all of those ideologies,
So,
the way we track hate groups is, just to kind of start a conversation, over the course of a calendar year, we basically, monitor pretty deeply, the ecosystem of radical extremism across the country for the purposes of seeing which groups are active, which organizations are new, which groups are out there spreading hateful and bigoted ideologies. And then at the end of a calendar year, we release a hate list, which is effectively the groups that existed in the previous year. And then the process starts all over.
Okay. So what qualifies a group as a hate group? Where does SPLC draw the line between a person or group who's just saying mean stuff and sharing terrible ideas, and then there's the line that it gets crossed that puts them into the category of an actual hate group?
A hate group is an organization that attacks and demonizes a group of people based on an immutable characteristic. In other words, a protected character class. So, this would include race, gender, religion to a degree, sexual orientation. And so these groups vilify a person for something they cannot change. That's effectively what it is.
Okay, so is there a legal distinction or liabilities that come with that kind of a tag?
Not at all. No, this is essentially our opinion. It is, our First Amendment right to express that we believe this group is propagating a hateful ideology, and we do. Just as these organizations are protected in the First Amendment privileges to basically say whatever they want, no matter how horrible it is.
Yeah. So, well, there are those on the right who will say things like Black Lives Matter is a hate group, and then there are those on the left saying that anyone defending a Confederate statue belongs in a hate group. Is this kind of label being applied too loosely by arguing factions on either side?
Well, the current political environment is certainly complicated and challenging. But, there are a lot of, especially, there are people on the right who want, for example, the anti-fascist movement to be labeled a hate group, or even Black Lives Matter. But the difference, the difference is this. Black Lives Matter is a grassroots organization that is not out there saying that a group of people is horrible, based on something that cannot change. They're, fighting for rights, fighting for police protections. As with the anti-fascist movement, yes, it's an incredibly violent movement right now, but it's not an organization that is attacking someone based on a protected characteristic. Something that's legally protected. The fascists are saying that people on the far right are horrible and evil, and they're committing violence, horrible violence, to prove this point. But they're not saying that someone is evil or worthless, or they're not vilifying someone because of their race, their ethnicity, their sexual orientation, or anything like that.
And then you see people coming through with the free speech movement and these protests that are saying that they want to defend their free speech, saying that their white lives matter. They're kind of fighting on a different spectrum, but those would not be people that would be classified necessarily in a hate group unless they have an alignment, I would imagine, then with neo-Nazis or KKK.
Absolutely. And if you look at the White Lives Matter movement that's popped up recently, it's populated quite heavily by neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other white nationalists across the movement.
Okay. So when you're looking at Florida, the SPLC identifies 63 hate groups that are active in our state. How long have those been here, and do we know if they've grown or diminished over the years?
I don't have the data year by year. I will say this about Florida. If you look at the hate map, the concentrations of hate groups across the country, hate groups tend to be more populated, greater in number, in states that have greater diversity in their populations. It's an interesting trend. If you look over across the Midwest and into the Great Plains, where the population is largely Caucasian or white, you'll see that hate groups are sort of nearly as numerous as they are in Florida.
Yeah, it's interesting because California is number one and we're number two. They're both very diverse states.
Right. It's very interesting about that. And if you think about the populations in those two states, they're very diverse and multicultural populations. And what we found is that amid that diversity, in the mix of that diversity, there pops up almost always these groups who don't like it, who want to then attack anyone who is not white, because thereby pushing for a white hegemony.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question that I have: how does the SPLC find out about these groups? Because on your map, there's a KKK group listed in Cape Coral, for example, and I can't find anything about them anywhere online. How do you get information about them?
Well, we scour the web. We scour racist extremist publications for notification of new groups. We attend events and hear what people have to say, and then we do an assessment on whether this group is active, what they're doing, and whether they're and what exactly is they're saying.
Well, that would indicate why your title is investigator, correct? So you have to really dig in there and find them, and they kind of fly under the radar, so they're kind of tough to find.
That's a great point. Organizations don't want to be found. The purpose of the hate map is so that we as Americans have an understanding of how thoroughly and how far and wide hateful ideologies are seeded across the country. We want these ideologies to be gone. We don't believe that that neo-Nazis or Ku Klux Klan members or white supremacists or any variety of hate has a place in a 21st century functioning democracy. And the current political climate has made this even more of a pressing mission, I would argue, because from across the board, on the radical right. You know, they feel a sense of legitimacy now that Donald Trump is president, to be blunt. He's blown repeated fog whistles to them, and they feel that they have his support.
So when I'm talking about, for example, this KKK group in Cape Coral, how do I find out how dangerous this group is or how close they are to putting on some sort of rally around my town? How do you learn about that? Is that something that the SPLC can track on a micro level?
We can, and we're frequently notified of events that are happening through publications. And interestingly enough, given the current political climate, groups that would try to sneak into public library meeting spaces to hold a Holocaust denial meeting or something like that are increasingly just operating in broad daylight. You know, with this cultural sea change that's happening in America, these organizations are. Are not feeling any shame, and furthermore, decide that it's best to be out in the open space where they can possibly sway people and get recruits.
And then on the flip side, there's a black nationalist group that's been identified in Fort Myers. Can you tell me anything about them?
Well, black nationalism is an ideology that is twisted by twisted ideologies. In other words, it's a response to centuries of persecution. But that doesn't dismiss what they do. You know, their black nationalist groups can be anti-Semitic. They target Jewish populations across the country, and they also have a very interesting and a little bizarre theology behind their ideas. You know, making statements that that white people were brought to Earth by aliens to all manner of sort of bizarre explanations for why white people are evil. So we track those groups as well. Sometimes we get criticized that we only track white groups that hate African Americans or immigrants or something like that. But we track organizations and groups that propagate any manner of hate.
Yeah, we are talking about hate groups in Florida, if you're just joining the show, how they're identified and what the media attention means for these hate groups across the country with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Call in and ask any questions or have any comments at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So a major group the SPLC identifies as based in Florida is a white supremacist group that's called Stormfront, operating out of West Palm Beach. Can you tell me about the history of Stormfront and what they stand for and how they're active?
Stormfront is one of the most important groups active on the radical right now. It is a website and an organization, and it started in the early 90s with the advent of AOL, and it was started by a man named Don Black, who was a former Klan member, a good friend of David Duke, and so on. The website is responsible for radicalizing scores of people. And we've tracked a good number of murders that have been tied to users of that website. It is a website that is increasingly less relevant than it was, however, because of some young startup organizations and websites that take on a much more web savvy approach to spreading some pretty vile anti-Semitism.
So. There was a guy who went on a cop-killing rampage in the Northeast, and he was also linked to Stormfront?
Which guy are you talking about?
Something in the Northeast that my producer is telling me that there was something that was linked to that. So that's the importance of, I imagine, tracking these hate groups to find out when they're starting to do call for action. When they get to that point, when they're asking for people to do things or inciting people to do these kinds of things, do you, as the Southern Poverty Law Center, then turn that information over to authorities?
We work with law enforcement in some respects in training them on what hate groups are, how the radical right is operating, what threats are looming from extremist organizations. But our primary mission expands beyond that, which is to notify the public of these organizations and where they are. It's an important one, we feel, as I said earlier, because these types of groups try to hide. They don't want to be known. And we know that time and time again, it's not a question of if these ideologies lead to violence. It's a matter of when they lead to violence.
And you mentioned...
Did a study,
Sorry, you mentioned earlier the sea change, though, that's occurring. These are people that have wanted to stay underground and be unnoticeable. And, you, I mean, for example, like I was saying, I couldn't find the local KKK group here. But now they're coming out onto the streets. Are you afraid that there's going to be more of that?
More of what?
The sea change that you're saying with coming out from the underground.
I think that it's no longer a matter of fear. It's a matter of reality. Beginning with the 2016 presidential campaign, these groups saw an opportunity to ride a political wave to public acceptance. They felt that Donald Trump's policies, from his ban on all Muslim immigrants to the border wall, some people on his campaign tweeting out anti-Semitic messages, which they later disavowed, they felt this was sort of a wink-wink, nod-nod approach, that it was okay to come out, that they would have a friend in the federal government that they hadn't had in years. We have to remember that this sort of ramping up of public appearances of hate groups who are holding rallies across the country comes in the wake of the 8 years of the Obama administration, which saw record growth in the number of hate groups, largely because they were upset with the fact that we had our first African-American president.
So ACT for America, though, the organization that's sponsoring so-called free speech rallies across the nation, they've now canceled about 70 planned America First events that were going to be in 36 states in September. So as someone who monitors these groups, tell me a little bit more about ACT for America and what these cancellations might mean. Could they be shamed back into going undercover?
Well, that's a good question, and it certainly looks like that may be what's happening. After Charlottesville, the radical right and all the ideologies on it, which have been pushing into the public space, are sort of retreating. They're realizing that these increasingly tense street battles that they're finding instigating, are not necessarily good for PR, for how people see them. They are honestly hoping to recruit Americans, into racist ideologies at a time when the federal government doesn't view them as a threat, comparable to, say, Islamic terrorists.
And then if we go into a more extreme situation, if they are shamed into going into hiding, do you feel that there's a risk of marginalizing these groups into doing something even more violent from the underground because they feel like they aren't able to crawl out from the dark corners of the Internet?
Well, as I said earlier, the question of violence emanating from radical right ideologies is an ever-present concern and a nearly ever-present reality. We've tracked extremist ideology motivated violence and domestic terrorism across the country for a number of years, and we found some disturbing trends. Interestingly enough, the violence that emanates from far right ideologies is more often than not carried out by a single individual who has no connection to a hate group, someone who's been radicalized by their websites, nevertheless. Someone who becomes a true believer and feels that they need to be the one to go out and commit an act of violence or kill someone to make a political statement.
The lone wolf.
Yes, the lone wolf. And so the question becomes, is it the question you're asking? Is it better to marginalize hate groups and make them run for the shadows, or to force them into the mainstream so they face the light of public scrutiny? Is a good one. I don't think we've seen a period quite like this before, though. Not in decades, at least in the United States, where people who hold ideologies that we thought we had left behind, with the advancement of the civil rights movement and so on, these people are feeling no shame for their beliefs. And I think those are telling moments to show how the shame disappeared and when it did. Richard Spencer, who held that meeting in Washington, D.C. after Trump's election, where, I think The Atlantic caught everyone sea-kyling, throwing their arms up in the air and Nazi salutes. He attended the Republican National Convention, and he held a sign that said, want to talk to a racist? The word racist was in single quotes. And he was eagerly defending his principles and positions regarding white identity and white power, essentially. And it was a moment when shame sort of disappeared from the debate. this was not a guy who was concerned about losing his job if it were found out he was an advocate for racist ideologies. This is not a guy who cared for any loss of social standing. He had no shame for this reality, and we're finding that more and more among a younger generation of radicalized racists who are coming up in the age of Trump.
You know, it's really surprising, too, for some people that aren't involved in hate groups, tracking them or being in a hate group. A lot of people saw this on this event that happened in Charlottesville. They kind of regarded the KKK as a relic of history, that neo-Nazis are, you know, maybe 12 people in the country may adhere to that. But the events that came out were a bit of a shock to a lot of people. And you study these people from both ends of the extremist rhetoric. Were you surprised that rhetoric became action out there on the street? Did you think back when you saw those Hail Hitler salutes that happened in that video that was leaked, did you foresee, but is it surprising to you that it's come all the way to this?
It is not surprising to me. Only because, you know, we've watched this for, you know, I've watched this personally for 7 years, and I've seen how it's grown, and I've seen it's you know, the movement's desire to maintain or gather increased relevance and legitimacy. I am surprised at just how complicated and how much the public debate between racists and people who oppose them has turned into a serious conflict. I am also surprised at the willingness of various ideologies in the radical right to get together and work as one.
Yeah,
you had
the KKK with neo-Nazis and then Confederate flags flying around. They seem to be getting along pretty well.
They do, and they're united around the issue of Confederate statues. You know, they're united around that issue as a means to have a public presence. You know, and it's interesting that the so-called Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, which was intended to be, as its title said, a moment when racist extremists on the far right of the political spectrum got together and spoke with singular voice. That event turned horribly violent and fatal as a result of one of their own.
So going forward, do you feel more concerned as we march forward? Do you feel like these hate groups are going to be coming out into the streets more, or do you feel like they may be on the retreat ever since Boston, when you had thousands and thousands of people up against a handful of, I think they were a free speech group?
You know, that's a very good question, and I have a little bit of trouble saying where we're going to go, but I think we might have a prediction or sort of have an idea of what's going to happen. Looking where this movement has, you know, has grown increasingly violent and increasingly eager to voice their views in the public space. What we, in the aftermath of Charlottesville, I think there's the recognition among leaders of the radical right who see what happened as a very bad moment of PR for them. The optics were not good. The optics were actually horrible, and I think actually true to what the movement is. As they back away from these public appearances, I don't think they're going to disappear. I just don't know where they're going to go next.
Well, I mean, the risk there is you're just brushing it under the carpet for another day.
That may be the case.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank our guest, Ryan Lenz, Senior Investigative Reporter with the Southern Poverty Law Center. Thanks so much for being part of our show today.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, 200 dogs were airlifted out of Puerto Rico this week. We'll meet one of them after the break and talk with the National and Local Humane Society representatives about what's called Operation Gray Muzzle. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.